Hello and welcome to New Things Under the Sun. I'm Matt Clancy. This is the third podcast in our Patents as a Way to Measure Innovation Week. As I said, I was originally planning to write a post on that question, should you use patents to measure innovation? And it spiraled out of control. It's now four posts. This is the third one. The first two were released the last 2 days. The next one will be released tomorrow, but you can actually read all of the stuff on the website, New Things Under the Sun, if you don't want to wait. Anyway, this week we're going to ask, or not this week, but today we're going to ask, do studies based on patents get different results? Because lots of social science research about innovation relies on patents as a way to measure innovation, and it's not clear that patents are a great way to do that. As we discussed earlier this week, probably only, you know, a smallish share of inventions receive patent protection. And moreover, while patenting does predict a lot of other measures of innovation, the linkage tends to be a pretty noisy one. So, you know, we might ask, maybe the patent-based innovation literature is kind of built on a foundation of sand. One way to validate patents as a measure of innovation is to exploit the fact that there are tons of papers that study the same phenomenon with different data sets. And some of those papers use patents and some don't. Do they arrive at different results on average? If so, that suggests that the papers using patent data might be picking up something kind of unique about patents rather than something about innovation per se. On the other hand, if analyses built on patent and non-patent data tend to get similar results, well, that suggests patents are, you know, roughly as good a measure of innovation as the available alternatives, at least. Now, I actually think New Things Under the Sun, my project, can itself be a useful data source on this specific question. At the time of recording, that's March 2024, New Things Under the Sun had 73 articles, and those articles examine, or they synthesize, multiple academic papers to examine various sort of narrow claims about innovation. From those 73, I count 37 articles that discuss studies built on both patent and non-patent data. The other, you know, 36, I believe, they're going to, you know, be exclusively based on patent data papers or exclusively on non-patent data papers. But among the 37 on both, we can then ask, how often do the patent-based analyses disagree with the non-patent analyses? So I looked them over to see. And my takeaway from that exercise is that studies relying on patent data tend to obtain similar results to those that don't. In 31 out of 37, that is 84% of the articles I've written, which are about claims about innovation, in about 84% of the cases, I didn't think there was a meaningful disagreement between the patent and non-patent studies. Regardless of which type of data is used for the problem, I thought results were sort of broadly consistent. In the other 6 out of 37, that is 16% of articles I wrote, I thought there was generally a mix of agreement and disagreement between the patent and non-patent data. The patent and non-patent data differed along some qualitatively important differences, but though even in these cases, I didn't sort of find uniform disagreement. For example, in one of my articles called "Are Ideas Getting Harder to Find Because of the Burden of Knowledge?", non-patent data indicated that first discoveries are being made at increasingly older ages. But patent data doesn't show that result. However, both the patent and non-patent data were consistent with other things, like the size of teams is increasing and specialization is increasing. Nonetheless, because there was some disagreement that I thought was qualitatively important, this is an article that I classified as exhibiting some disagreement between the patent and non-patent evidence. You know, actually, I'm not sure that the differences I found between patent and non-patent data are actually any more severe than you would find if you were to explore the same phenomenon with the same data set. For example, if two papers looked at the same kind of phenomenon, but with data on, say, journal articles, both of them. Now, that said, note that my definitions of agreement and disagreement, you know, they're kind of loose and subjective. They're just Matt Clancy's views. I'm looking, are they directionally the same rather than are they numerically the same? And moreover, not all of the scope for disagreement and agreement was substantive or super substantive. Sometimes the bulk of the evidence in an article comes from exclusively patent or almost exclusively from patent or almost exclusively from non-patent data. And the data from sort of the other side, the other source, only covers maybe a small part of the sort of overall claim. Even so, in many cases, it's a bit surprising to me that there actually aren't more disagreements, since in some cases there are actually important differences between the kinds of innovations that are studied by patent or non-patent data. So in the newsletter, I go through and I classify all 37 of these articles and sort of talk briefly about what I found in agreement or disagreement. I don't think that sounds like a great podcast, so I would encourage you to go read it if you want, but to give you a flavor of it, I'll read a few from each category, okay? And after that, we're going to discuss some potential problems with this whole exercise, which are, I think, mostly around selection effects. So here's some articles where I thought there was disagreement between the patent and non-patent evidence. One article I wrote was called Age and the Impact of Innovations. As scientists or inventors age, their work receives fewer citations from a narrower set of innovators or scientists, and it becomes less disruptive using a sort of citation measure. And that's actually the same whether you use either patents or academic papers. But productivity over an academic life cycle, that is how many papers are produced per year, appears to remain high for a longer period of time than productivity of an inventor, which is measured as patents, you know, per year or something. A second example of something where I thought there was some disagreement, an article I wrote called Innovation Mostly Gets Harder. The same level of research effort yields fewer, successively smaller improvements by lots of different measures of innovation. But this is not true for raw patent counts. So if you just look at how many patents there are relative to sort of measures of inventive effort. However, it is true for one particular measure of innovative patents. And you can see the article for more discussion on that. Now let me give you a flavor of some areas where I thought there was basically uniform agreement. I've written an article called Adjacent Knowledge is Useful. And in that one, patent evidence from agricultural technology and a variety of non-patent evidence all suggest uniformly that knowledge spillovers tend to be most often pulled from fields that are not the same, but not too far away. To take another example, kind of at random here, there's an article called Gender and What Gets Researched that I've written. Evidence from both patents and academic research papers in that article finds that women are more likely to research medical problems that are related to their gender. There's also some evidence from both patent and non-patent evidence that as gender representation improves, men also become more likely to work on those topics. Let me give you another one. I've written an article called Innovators Who Immigrate. When US or EU inventors immigrate, their patenting rises. Similarly, when scientists move to well-resourced places for science, their academic productivity rises across lots of different measures. All right, let me pick one last one here. I have an article called When Technology Goes Bad. In that article, a greater share of R&D is focused on health and safety over time, whether that's measured by the share of patents that correspond to medical technologies or the share of publicly funded research spending that is on classified as being about health and the environment. All right, and like I said, there's a lot more that you can dive in and read, but I'm not going to go through all of them. But that gives you an idea about kind of what I was looking for when I did this. Now, the above exercise finds sort of broad agreement between innovation studies that use patent data and those that don't, where they study, I think, closely related phenomena. But we might reasonably worry, is this actually an artifact of selection? Because indeed, there are multiple possible layers of selection bias in this exercise. The first level of selection bias is that researchers decide when and when not to use patent data. And in this post-exercise, I'm only observing the cases where the researcher thought patents would be an appropriate measure of innovation and where I thought the paper was a good fit for new things under the sun. And so the claim that patents and non-patent data tend to arrive at similar conclusions actually only applies to the set of claims where researchers thought patents were an appropriate data set. And also, I guess, that I thought the researchers wrote a nice paper. So let me make that concrete. I have a series of posts on New Things in the Sun about publication bias in the sciences. And that is, you know, the notion that the research record gives a biased picture of evidence since only positive findings are publishable. There's a lot of posts on that, but only one of those posts features any studies that rely on patent data. It makes sense, though, that few researchers thought it was appropriate to study publication bias with any information from patents, since publication bias is typically assumed to be an outcome of incentives that are peculiar to academia, not private sector invention. So if someone did try to study publication bias in patents, well, they might get a quite different result than if they studied it with data on journal articles. So the upshot of all that is that this post's analysis implies that if you think a paper is by a good researcher and it uses patent data, the results of the paper, you know, this post implies the results of that paper would probably agree qualitatively with another paper on the same topic that used appropriate non-patent data. But if you instead start with a specific research question, this post does not imply you're going to get the same results whether you use patents or not. They instead imply that you would get similar results if it's the kind of research question that researchers think patents are appropriate for, because that's the only stuff I'm observing. If it's not, then the results of this post don't really apply. It's not the claim that patents measure innovation well in all cases. It's more that something like innovation researchers have done a decent job of restricting their attention or their use of patent data to cases where patent data works reasonably well. Now, there's a second, though, potential layer of selection bias above the researcher's own decision about whether to use patents or not. Publication bias, which we talked about earlier, might actually be giving us a skewed perception of how reliable is patent data. Suppose that patents really are a bad measure of innovation, and accordingly, they just rarely deliver positive findings. It might be the case that we only observe the papers that do get positive results, since those are the only ones that are publishable. Now, if this issue is serious, it would mean I'm overstating the extent to which research using patent data arrives at similar conclusions as papers that don't, because all the ones that don't get the same thing are kind of hidden from us. I think, though, that the popularity of patent data as a data source is at least some evidence against this concern, because if the data had a reputation for leading disproportionately often to unpublishable null results, it probably wouldn't be so popular to use. On the other hand, patent data is very easy to use compared to other data sources, and so I think this is still at least something to bear in mind. Lastly, there's another layer of selection bias, which is, could be that there's bias from the fact that my choice of topics to write about on New Things Under the Sun is not random. I like writing about topics that I think are important or where I think academic research has learned something and can tell us something useful. And that latter preference for cases where I think we've learned something, that's a potentially serious source of bias, because all else equal, I feel less enthusiastic writing about a field where there's just a muddle of different findings depending on which data set you use. Although I think I would still write a post on that if I thought the topic was important. That might mean my selection of topics is biased towards claims where patents and non-patent data obtain similar results, since those are the ones where I'm most confident social science research can tell us something useful. However, I think there's at least one way to evaluate how much of a concern this should be. New Things Under the Sun is a living literature review. You don't really get this on the podcast, but there's a website behind all this, and I go back and I update articles as the literature evolves. And there might well be a selection bias in how I choose which articles to write. But after the articles are written, there's a lot less bias in my choice about which articles to update. Because one of my goals for this project is for the post to provide an honest account of the state of the literature. And that means if new studies come out that contradict what I've already written, I actually do feel obliged to update the post to reflect this. That presents an opportunity to check for this sort of last form of selection bias. If updates tend to find more disagreement between patent and non-patent data than original articles, well, that is a suggestion that my choice of what to initially write about is overstating the extent to which patent and non-patent studies agree. Now, going through my newsletter archive, I found 20 updates to existing articles that include patent and non-patent data. Of these updates, 3 have at least some disagreement between the patent and the non-patent analysis in the update. The other 17 don't, at least in my judgment. That's actually pretty close to the ratio I found in my original survey of 37 articles that examined both patent and non-patent data. About 15%, that is 3 out of 20% of the time, there's some disagreement between analyses reliant on patent data and those that don't, compared to 16% in my main analysis. Now, in the newsletter, you can look at the appendix and again see how I classified all those updates and a similar kind of short description, but I'm not going to go through that on the podcast. All in all, This exercise, for me, formalized an intuition that I've had for a long time. I've noticed that when I write about studies that use patent data, I often encounter skepticism from my readers. And for that reason, I often go out of my way to try and find articles that don't rely on patent data, but which study the same phenomenon as the patents-based papers, because I think readers will find it more compelling if there's both kinds of evidence. But in my experience, that exercise rarely leads me to substantively revise my original views, because I don't typically find really different results when I go looking for non-patent data to sort of complement the patent data. So in the academic literature, my conclusion is basically, if it's possible and sensible to study a question with both patent data and non-patent data, in my experience writing new things under the sun, the results tend to be subjectively similar. Thanks for listening. And now it's time for the standard end of the episode boilerplate. You've been listening to a podcast from New Things Under the Sun, a living literature review with the mission of communicating what academia knows about innovation in accessible but rigorous research syntheses. New Things Under the Sun is a living literature review, which means I go back and update these research syntheses as new research is published or I discover it. The podcast you listen to is taken from the first published version of one of these syntheses. To see if there's been any updates about the claims made in this podcast, or to learn more about this project, head to newthingsunderthesun.com.